what direction they were going to go in as far as chairman. And the tentative chairman right now named is Pat Gratton. That has to be voted on January 5th at our you know, swearing meeting. But that is what came out of their camp as of you know, late last week.
That's out of the Republican camp?
The Republican camp.
Yeah.
And it was unanimous.
Interesting turn of events. Because I know that Roy Brown had put himself back in, and Art Bayer was also angling for it as well. But so they've decided to unite. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Feel free.
So Billy, Pat Gratton is the Democratic Republican supervisor in the town of Kinderhook. What do you hear about a deputy?
You know, there's a host of various rumors. I mean, I've been hearing Kevin McDonald, Rick Scalera. You know, you hear names out here and you just don't know. Obviously, those people aren't voted on by us. They're voted on by the chairman. So he gets to pick who his deputies are. It certainly wouldn't hurt him if he did have a Rick Scalera, but... you know, there are some other qualified people I see sitting on the board. Rick Keaveney, I think Rick would be a great choice. He's kind of middle of the road. He always gets endorsed by the Democrats up there. So obviously, you know, he has demonstrated that he can govern from the middle of the aisle.
Do you think that Pat will appoint one Democrat and one Republican? They usually are two deputies, right?
Right. Art Bear did that, and that worked with some degree of success. And Roy came in and, you know, was promising more openness, but he eliminated that along with eliminating any kind of Democratic participation as far as on the upper level, meaning chairman or vice chairs committees. Although, you know, he did have some relationships with some of the Democrats on the, you know, on the whole, he didn't really give us real upper level participation. And I think Pat coming in will look at that. And I think he would make some changes on how he handled that. So yeah, I have a strong feeling that he may add a Democrat as a vice chair, but again, that's, you know, that's his decision to make.
So, in the election in November, the Democrats lost, Meg Robertson from New Lebanon and Ed DeBosny, who was not a Democrat but was an Independence Party that caucused with the Democrats. So have you looked at the weighted vote numbers?
I haven't taken a look at the weighted vote numbers yet. Actually, I was a little disheartened at the whole thing and the whole scenario about what took place. Because quite frankly, look, we all live in a county where it's a very small county, 62 to 65,000 people. I mean, we're not a huge county compared to Dutchess and some of our southern neighbors. Mm-hmm. So everybody pretty much knows everybody, regardless of your political affiliation or any other, you know, that kind of thing. But the last 2 years at the Board of Supervisors and the actions that have taken place there, I was adamant, and I totally believe that the people in Columbia County were tired of what was coming out of the leadership on the Board of Supervisors. And I thought that we as Democrats put up some great candidates. You know, we had Linda Gabesha and Kopeck, and I just thought we put together a great slate and we got our clocks clean, and it really was hard to explain. And I heard some people say it was the Obama effect and it was the economy and it was a host of things. But I started breaking down race by race. And each town, except for Kopeck, which I couldn't figure out, but in each town other than that, Greenport, New Lebanon, and Chatham, you know, I think there were individual issues that were really town-centric. They had nothing to do really with the county at all. Had nothing to do with nationwide politics. Mm-hmm. It was specific to that town.
Salt Garage here or...
Hannaford, right. You know, that accountant that was hired in Greenport, which turned out to be a mistake. You know, there was a host of, you know, town issues that affected our town candidates.
So, Cindy, you've had a little time to think about it. So do you attribute it to anything, or is it just sort of like one of those years?
Well, first of all, I agree with you, Billy. We got our clock cleaned. But we did also have a couple of pluses, mm-hmm. and I totally agree with you that I think our slate was, all during campaign season, I was telling everyone it's the best slate I've ever seen for Columbia County on the Democratic ticket. We had a certified, experienced accountant running for county treasurer. We had Gene Keeler running for DA, who I would certainly want on my side if I were in trouble. We had a big win in Richard Coeck making it to the county judgeship, and I'm really thrilled about that. I'm thrilled for Richard.
That was a big win.
A big win, and I'm thrilled for our community because it's time we have some what the average person would say is fairness from the bench, especially with cases involving kids. So I'm personally really thrilled about that. I'm thrilled about that for county residents.
The other good news was that in the city of Hudson, the Democrats took every seat, except for the mayor's seat.
That was huge.
We took back two seats for the Democrats that had been held by Republicans, the two highest weighted votes on the Board of Supervisors, the 5th Ward and the 3rd Ward. Our guest today, Ellen Thurston, won the 3rd Ward seat that was left by William Hallenbeck, who became our new mayor and is about to become our new mayor. So in the city of Hudson, it was a big win, but the rest of the county was really troublesome and disappointing. For full disclosure, I'm Victor Mendolia. I'm the host of the show. I am the Hudson City Democrats chair, and I also am first vice chair of the Columbia County Democratic Committee. I'm second in command to our guest, Cindy Hall. So,
let's speak about the command, shall we? Listen, before we go on, I don't want to forget Dr. George Davis.
Absolutely.
Who ran for coroner. And, you know, I just can't figure that one out. I just can't. For 100 years around here, we had anybody and their brother running for coroner and with no specific qualifications except the big one, which is name recognition, until George. We were so thrilled. I think the community was thrilled to have an MD as our coroner.
Because there is no requirement to be coroner except to get the most votes, which is really bizarre. It's really got to be one of the strangest positions.
That is bizarre, but George did such a fabulous job in the time he was there as coroner. He made a lot of good friends. He helped so many people during probably their most difficult times, families and everyone around the community who had a death, and I was just astounded that Bertram, of course, has huge name recognition,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that did it, but I wish that we did have some more specific qualifications for the job. I mean, we have a multi-million-dollar budget for Columbia County. We have all kinds of needs. We have so many strengths in our county, and it's time for us to step it up.
We're going to 7FM. We'll be right back. And we're back. So I'll remind our listeners that I'm here with Cindy Hall. Cindy is the first vice chair, I mean the former first vice chair, is the chair of the Columbia County Democrats. Ellen Thurston, supervisor-elect for the 3rd Ward in Hudson, and William Hughes Jr., who is the supervisor in the 4th Ward. So we have a special election coming up in this area coming up. Mark Molinaro, who's our current assemblyman in the 103rd district, which includes Hudson, Greenport, Copaic, I forget exactly all the towns, but it's probably the biggest district in Columbia County. And it goes all the way down to Fishkill and East Fishkill and Poughkeepsie. And it doesn't take in Poughkeepsie, right?
No.
It should.
if we have anything to say about redistricting, it will. Clearly, the district had been drawn to favor Republicans, and still does, at least. But the districts will be redrawn, and the November election will be in a new district, presumably, if everything goes as planned. But there is a potential special election for the seat. Do you know the rules? I mean, I think the governor does not really have to call a special election if he doesn't want to, right?
Well, what we're hearing right now is that the governor will call for a special election. And what I'm hearing is that it'll be a 90-day campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And we're kind of expecting that announcement, rumor only, may come as early as the next week or two.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have to see. But we do know that there are, I believe, 7 or 8 candidates that are being interviewed right now, which is great. I mean, I'm thrilled that we have that many people that would step up and be the candidate for the 103, which is, you know, as you said, Victor, it's a huge district, and it takes in probably about 80% of Columbia County. I think it's just the northern Kinderhook and some
it's
of the
Stuyvesant,
yeah, Canaan and you know the northern areas, but it takes in a great deal of Columbia County, and it's an important position.
There's a small bit that's in the 127th as well, but that's like, yeah, Claremont and Germantown, I think.
But it's ridiculous. A weird district.
Yeah,
I mean, it's
yeah.
a weirdly set up.
Yeah. Columbia County being split into 3 districts is outrageous, really. For our population is so small, it's like we could easily be in one district if they wanted us to be in one district. But it's, you know, these districts, particularly upstate, well, not just upstate. I mean, the districts all over the state have been drawn to keep the people who are elected in power. And that's on the Republican and Democratic side. We support, at least I personally do, nonpartisan independent redistricting. And I think that's
we'll
the only way to go.
Well, we'll see what happens with that.
Well, with that being said, though, because I've been hearing rumors about redistricting and how the redistricting is going, and I've been hearing some rumors about the 103rd that it may no longer be, that it may get joined with another district. So it's pretty interesting that the rumors are out there that the governor will call an election maybe within the 90 days, because I've also been hearing rumors that they may combine the 103rd with another district, which would be really interesting.
Well, that may still happen. It's strictly all rumors at this point. The other interesting thing to me is that we haven't heard anything about a Republican candidate, a possibility. And I think that's pretty interesting at this stage, that we have 6 or 7 possibilities on the Democratic side, but we really just haven't heard a thing. Have you heard anything?
I haven't, but I'm sure. I mean,
I have. They, I'm not saying
they've had more time to really plan, because obviously you knew that Mark was
right.
running, and so, you know.
So they may have their candidate ready.
Right, I don't think they're
going to
get caught. I don't think no one's getting caught with their pants down.
Oh no, I'm sure that's you're right. But usually that stuff gets leaked, and we haven't heard anything.
Yeah.
So this is a first. We have our second train coming through.
I've never had two
in one show.
I love it.
No, Victor, that's the same train coming back.
Well, I mean, that's what I mean. 2 trips, anyway.
Do you know how nice that is to hear that? I live in Claverick. I mean, I used to live on Union Street, But even in Claverick in the summer, I can hear the train whistle. It's wonderful. I love it.
Well, I worked for the ADM running mill cars up to the plant. I used to work there.
You know, though, for those of us who live near that train, it's called the grain train because the wild turkeys follow the train and pick up the spilled grain.
Pigeons as well.
Do you think that we stand a chance of district as it stands? I mean, it's fairly split by like a third, of Republicans, Democrats, and no party. But the Republicans still have a little edge on it.
Very similar to the split right here in Columbia County, I would say.
Yeah,
I'm the eternal optimist. I'm the Democrat who believes that Democrats could and should win. So do I think that we have a chance? Absolutely.
I'm a little different. I believe we have a chance if we run a real, you know, known and qualified candidate coming out of Dutchess. I do not believe unfortunately, we have some really qualified people who live here in Columbia County that are Democrats. I just don't think they have enough support or name recognition in Dutchess, which is primarily where most of the weighted vote or the populist vote is in the 103rd, to pull it off.
It's funny, though, most of the candidates that I know of, both on the Republican side and the Democratic side, are in Fishkill or East Fishkill, which is the most populous part of the district, but is also the most likely to not be in the district after redistricting. So it's a strange situation where they may win a seat in, say, March and then not be in the district for the November race. They'd have to either move into the district or move somewhere else.
So, Billy, let me just say that I agree with you that the candidate that we put up has to really show something. I think Mark Molinaro has been very effective as assemblyman. He's everywhere. He is thought to be very charming and charismatic. And we need to put up a really hot, qualified candidate, somebody who's going to have the capital to move an excellent campaign and certainly the energy and know-how about the issues to do a dynamite job for Democrats. So, yeah, that little codicil goes on my optimistic view of whether we can take the seat or not.
And then we of course, will have the congressional race, Chris Gibson, in November.
And boy, do I want him out.
You know, I've never seen somebody make statements that they are going one way and then the votes make absolutely the opposite. I mean, it's really perplexing to me that he thinks that he can just get away with it. It's, you know, there's all this grandstanding on, like, you know, I'm for Social Security and I'm not going to vote to cut it, or I'm for the extension of the the payroll tax abatement, and yet when it comes down to the vote, he votes the other way.
It's like, well, you know what,
that's called the Boehner effect.
Yeah, but that's also called politics. I mean, this is nothing new. Well, we've seen this time after time, after year, after generation, after decades, after forever. But what I think is new is that we have some people who are taking very close look at what our politicians are saying and what they're doing, what their actions are. And it's kind of a new phenomenon, I think, in the last number of years, especially with the economy the way it is and so many people without jobs, and that we really want them to put their money where their mouth is and to do what they've promised to do for us. Mm-hmm. And they haven't been doing it. And Chris Gibson is one. So you're right. He comes back to his district. He's here a lot. He's up with the farmers at 4 a.m. He's, you know, at the chicken dinners at churches. I mean, he's getting around. But if you look at his record of what his actions are in Washington and what he's saying right here in the district, it just doesn't click. It doesn't mesh. And we need to find a good candidate to run against him.
Well, I'll tell you, one of the real missteps, and Gibson was part of that, was this whole hold Congress hostage with the last worst bill that was being put forth. And I'm going to tell you that in itself did a great deal of damage to the Republicans, you know, nationwide. It showed exactly what we don't want to do here in Columbia County, and I don't think we're going to do on the Board of Supervisors, is where two parties, they dig their heels in, they saying, well, if I can't have it my way, then I'm not going to compromise at all. And it really came down to that, and no one was going to be hurt but the middle-class taxpayers. We were going to really, I actually was nervous myself because we were going to get slammed tax-wise.
Well, I think one of the other points is the taxing of the millionaires, the whole thing. I mean, it's kind of like my favorite kid's story of the Emperor Wears New Clothes. I mean, do these guys think we're idiots that it's patently unfair? Yeah. So to go through that, for the Republicans to go through that and say that it's the millionaires creating jobs, and you know, I think that really hurt them and will help us if we, once again, if we have excellent candidates who are qualified, certified, and will really run an excellent campaign.
See, the whole thing with the millionaires tax, there's two sides to that story. People will look at that, like you just mentioned, that, okay, well, the millionaires will be able to keep more of their money, and it will trickle down to the middle class and below as job creation. And then you have the other side of the coin where people are saying, well, look, the millionaires either A, hoard the money and pass it on to their family members, or they do like the people who are at Tyco and all that, and they go out and they buy $10,000 toilet seats and have these $2 million birthday parties. And, you know, so all of that takes place. When you see a CEO, you know, making $100 million a year, and look, I'm not here to bequeath that, but when you see that, when you see a CEO making $100 million a year and flying around in his private jet, and then he comes in and lays off 60 people, well, there's a real problem with that. And you have to really rethink now, are we on the right path with the millionaire's tax? That tax won't be the end-all, be-all. That's not our big solution of how to get this country out of debt. But it certainly will put a dent in it.
Well, speaking of that, Bill, tell us more about the budget for Columbia County. And I'm interested to know a little bit about the budget process.
Well, the budget process, actually, and I'll give kudos to Art Bear on this one, is before Art, there really wasn't too much of a budget process. The chairman used to sit down with the department heads and the treasurer. They would hammer out a budget, and they would give it to us, and we'd look at it. And from my knowledge, there weren't many zeros in there. When Art came in, he opened the budget process up to most of us as supervisors who wanted to sit in. The spreadsheets were laid out, and they were fairly easy to read. You first had to learn, you know, the whole process and the lingo like anything else. But it was a fairly easy read to understand. And so we were able to go through. You would bring a department head in, and you were able to go through and ask substantive type questions and understand the whole budget process and how the county actually worked. So that was refreshing. You know, our budget this year is $140 plus million, which is slightly up, but our sales tax was up, and we had some other things that were up in the county. So this is the second year in a row we were able to come in with a 0% increase in the tax levy for the taxpayers of Columbia County. And you know, I will tell you that that was a lot of hard work on everyone's part, especially though our department heads, because we really put them under the gun. We made them cut everything but the kitchen sink. And unfortunately though, we're past the bare bones. We have nothing else to cut. And with the 2% tax cap, and I'm gonna say this because, and I know many people haven't seen the new information coming out, but the new mandate team that was put together to address the unfunded mandates that have been put on us, along with the 2% tax cap, puts a real strain on us as a local government. But that mandate team, from what I've been reading, what they're looking to do, have done very little to relieve municipalities of our mandate responsibilities.
Real mandates.
And that's going to put a real strain on, I mean, You can look at other counties. Fortunately for us, we had a fairly decent fund balance. But for those counties who didn't have a fund balance and was really looking for some real mandate relief, man, hopefully the state takes a real strong look at that in the next couple of months and say, hey, we need to delve a little deeper here and cut a little harder. Because quite frankly, what most counties and local governments see that as is, it was just a pass the buck by the state. Mm-hmm. You know, they pass it down to us and say, you guys make the hard cuts. We're not capable of doing it.
So I'll remind our listeners that the opinions expressed on At Issue are mine and my guests alone. They don't represent the position of WGXE because WGXE does not endorse candidates or participate in any political dialogue, really, at all. And also to remind you that I'm here with Columbia County Democrats Chair Cindy Hall, Supervisor-elect Ellen Thurston, and Supervisor William Hughes Jr. from the 4th Ward. We've got about 10 more minutes to go. So, Cindy, you have something?
Well, I'm waving my arm around because we have two supervisors here, and I would like to make two small suggestions for the Board of Supervisors meetings. I would love it if there were a public comment period during the Board of Supervisor mm-hmm. meetings. Yep. I don't think that's too much to ask, that it is our government, and you guys make all these decisions in committee, it seems to me, and then just come to the full committee meeting and it's up or down. So to help the public understand more, and I think it's so important to do that, to have a public comment period. I don't care wherever it is in the meeting, but that should be. The second thing is, when I go to those meetings, I see these microphones hanging down from the ceiling. It's so hard to hear anything in there. Can't we turn the microphones on so that those of us who are sitting in the way back benches can at least hear what's going on? So those are two little things. There was something.
I've got one too.
Okay, go.
And after much fighting, there used to be no indication at all of what the supervisors were voting on, and now there is a list of the things to be voted on, but they are so obscure and so undetailed that as to not be meaningful at all. And I think that having just a clearer understanding about what the things that are being voted on that evening would be of much help, I think.
Well, okay, I'll address each one, individually. The first one is the microphones. It actually used to be a better system, and I'm not quite sure if the system is working effectively now. So that's an easy look at. What Victor just talked about, as far as the resolutions, that's what he was talking about. We get a resolution package prior to the meeting, and those are the resolutions we're voting on. And yes, they lack detail. It's just an overread because the actual full package is probably at times 20 pages long, and we just cannot make that many copies for what we see as potential citizens in the audience. I mean, we ourselves, the supervisors, have eliminated pretty much most of our paper forms as far as resolution. We get our minutes, our notes, and resolutions prior to each meeting via email. We do get a full packet if we request it, but it is not readily handed out to us either. And that was one of the things we were looking to do to cut down on our paper consumption.
They certainly don't have to put out one for everybody in the audience, but they could post one outside of the meeting room so that you could actually see the detailed version of it.
Well, I had thought about that. One of my ideas was putting a computer screen back there with where you can go down and you can scroll up and down on the particular resolutions that were being voted on that day. That seems like it would be a little easier. Again, we get to get away from to the use of the paper and things of that nature.
Well, another suggestion I would have is a little corner of the front page of the Register-Star that says, voting on Akawamik tonight, voting on the budget tonight, you know, a couple of smaller things just to give the public a little idea of what you all are working on. I mean, that's democracy in action. It's letting
that.
The public know what the heck is going on.
Somehow I doubt that's going to happen.
Well, I doubt it too, but...
That's the hardest thing to do, I think, because things get... agendas get changed at the last minute. I've seen it happen in the Common Council all the time. I once asked why the Common Council president didn't publish an agenda beforehand, or at least have one that could be passed out to the audience, and that was the excuse that was given to me. And since I've been in the Common Council, I understand that. You can announce that it's going to happen, and then at the last minute, there's some reason why you can't call for a vote that night.
Right.
I agree with all of these changes that Cindy is talking about. And I have a couple of others. One is the way in which the supervisors are seated in the chambers. There is no rhyme or reason to how they're not alphabetical by name or by town or anything. And it's the same way with the way the vote is called. Mm-hmm. Bill, maybe you can guide me on this, but there doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason to how the vote is called either.
Well, that actually was an issue. That actually was an issue of contention during the whole Walmart thing. Is we didn't have a regular voting system or order to how people were voting. And at the beginning of the year, Chairman Brown came in and decided that he wanted to change the order in which the board voted. And not everybody was up in arms about it, including myself. I was figuring, okay, we'll go either by town or by alphabetical order, and that would be that. But that wasn't the case. He seemed to stack people who at least this was what the belief was, and it certainly was my belief. He seemed to stack people whom he believed would vote with him the most of the time at the beginning of the order, and those who didn't vote with him most of the time, via meaning a supervisor like Pat Grattan or myself, was put at the back of the order. And people will say, well, what's the big deal? Well, what the big deal about that is, there are people on the board who look to their fellow supervisors to see which direction they're going in, and they tend to vote in that direction as well. So if you see where the whole top of the order is stacked and you get 10 yeses right in a row, and you're kind of indecisive of what direction you're going, and you go, wow, can't be that bad. The first 10 people voted for it. So then you will vote yes. And I just think it was a cheap political trick. So if we were to relook at that and did it on alphabetical order or by town, that would be perfectly fine. But what we just got a year ago was totally ridiculous. But
And to his credit, Pat Grattan called out the chairman and said yep, thank you, Your Majesty, you know, when he explained basically that he had done it unilaterally, and that's just the way it was.
But I want to go back to the last one I didn't get to address that Cindy Hall mentioned, was public questioning. And people have to understand, it would be nice if we got to public questioning, but we operate under legislative, you know, state legislative rules. And like on the state legislative and also Congress floor, you don't get to address the audience unless A, the chairman allows it, and then you request it from the chairman prior to the meeting. So our rules aren't the same as you would have within a town municipality type government where you can come up and ask questions. We operate under a very different you know, rules of engagement. Now, can they be changed? You know, I would guess they can, but the protocol as it is right now, I mean, when we pass resolutions and when we adopt laws, we have our own rules of order, but our primary rules are those of the legislature, the state legislature.
I mean, I don't know that it has to be questions. It could be just comments, and the Common Council operates at least at the end, you know. Does anybody has any new business that they want to bring before the council, and it's productive. I think it would be helpful. We only have about 2 minutes. Coming up is Al Jazeera English, and this is At Issue. So why don't you, like, you have a minute for each of our guests to say.
Well, let me just say thank you very much, Victor. This has been fun, and I would like to invite any registered Democrat to come to our county Democratic meetings, or the third Thursday of the month. And one thing that we're going to be doing a little bit differently is we're going to have our meetings in the towns to help us learn more about what the specific town issues might be. And I think it's a good thing.
So we'll be holding meetings at like the town hall or a senior center or whatever. Yeah.
Any public place in town. And secondly, let me just say that we're especially looking for young Dems this year. So if you're between, say, 18 and early 30s, give us a call. We'd like to get a really vital young Democratic committee going.
The website is columbiademocrats.net.
Yes, it is.
I just want to say that, as you know, Cindy, and I know because I've seen you there, at the committee meetings of the Board of Supervisors is where the real discussion takes place. And you can learn a great deal by going to those meetings. I mean, it's time consuming. But if you really want to be informed about county government, that's the place to be. And I think that comments, depending on the chairman, are allowed there. I mean, it's not stated as such. Now we'll have public comment. But if you just put up your hand and, you know, have something to say, mm-hmm. I think that it's allowed. But I hope to see many people at all of these meetings just to witness government in action.
So we really have, Bill, you have like 15 seconds. But all right. So I want to thank our guest, Bill Hughes from the 4th Ward in the city of Hudson. Ellen Thurston, 3rd Ward Supervisor-elect, and Cindy Hall from the Columbia County Democrats. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Victor.
Thanks, Victor.
Thank you.
And join us next week.